So just to re-emphasize, in case there were still any lingering worries, no, carbohydrates are not on the quiz. So the quiz is just going to be over amines. It's going to be over their acid-base properties, as I probably already had told you. And then we have this list of synthesis of amines that we've almost finished covering. Because so far we've talked about the attempt to make amines through SN2 substitution, but how that goes poorly usually because you get over-substitution. We talked about making acyl azides instead and reducing those. We talked about making and then reducing nitriles or amides or imines. And related to imines is also this reductive amination reaction. I think we were wrapping up with the Gabriel synthesis and got sidetracked talking about aniline a little bit, or was about to. So the last of the reactions we didn't cover were the Curtius and the Hoffman rearrangements, correct? Out of the list of reactions that initially we had? Oh, reduction of nitro. We didn't get there yet? Because we started talking about aniline. But we did talk about the reduction itself. So putting aniline aside just for the moment, that means in terms of synthesis reactions, it's just the Curtius and Hoffman rearrangements that we still have. So let's do those now. So the Curtius rearrangement. Involves an acyl azide. Which in turn we can make by reacting an acyl halide with sodium azide. Now, when I showed azide just yesterday, I showed it as a balanced structure, nitrogen double bonded to nitrogen, double bonded to nitrogen. I'm going to write a different form of structure here. That accentuates its reactivity. Because nitrogen gas is an excellent leaving group. Anytime that nitrogen can be expelled somehow, it likes to, because it's so thermodynamically a favorable product. You might remember the last time we saw something like this was in diazomethane, which although it's a great reagent for making methyl esters, I hopefully had also mentioned about how it's explosive. So same issue here. Acyl azides or azides in general can be kind of a handful to handle. But as long as it's done carefully, since this is such an excellent leaving group, it causes this unusual step to occur. We've seen something like this before in the borane reaction, where we have an alkyl shift occur due to a very specific thermodynamic situation. Nitrogen's so favorable to be expelled here that that's why this R group can just shift over. Now realize though that R group is shifting with the pair of electrons it was connected with, and so that technically would leave a positive charge on the carbonyl, which since we have a negative charge on that nitrogen, at the same time the shift occurs, which causes nitrogen to be expelled, we show another arrow coming back to make a double bond with the carbon. What we end up producing is a functional group that you have not seen before, known as an isocyanate. Now, the isocyanate in this particular rearrangement theoretically can be isolated, but they are awfully reactive, and so instead of trying to isolate them, you often just add the next reagent. Depending on what reagent we add, we can end up with different functional groups. I'm going to limit the discussion to just reacting with water, because we're supposed to be learning ways to make amines. So if I had a little bit of acid and water, what do you think is going to happen to this compound? Like, let me ask this as a twofold question. If I had just neutral water, and if it was able to react by itself, which of these atoms, nitrogen, carbon, or oxygen, would you expect water to attack? Which of the three atoms is the least electronegative? Carbon. Even if you don't have some of these mnemonic devices, like, for those of you that know the phrase, Funkel brick ship, that might be a phrase that's disappearing now, but it's a way of memorizing what the order of electronegativities are. Even if we don't know that, think of the second row of the periodic table, because we start with helium, or hydrogen, helium, lithium, beryllium, boron, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, CNO. So carbon's less electronegative than either nitrogen or oxygen, which means carbon has the delta positive on it. So as far as which atom would want to be attacked just by water, carbon does. Now, if it attacks the carbon, it's got double bonds. One or the other of them needs to open up. Which one is it going to be? Well, if we had the oxygen open up, though, wouldn't we be making the equivalent of an enolate, which we already know is thermodynamically unfavorable? So even though if we tried to push a negative charge all by itself, if we pushed it to the nitrogen, it would appear to make something that's unfavorable. But a nitrogen with a negative that is conjugated with this carbonyl is actually not as unfavorable. And as I said, and I know I'm doing this without writing it down because I don't want to get us too confused. If I try to open the carbon-oxygen double bond, it's just going to close up again. But if I say acidic conditions, here's another way you could rationalize this. Nitrogen should be more basic than oxygen, so nitrogen gets protonated first. Water attacks, pushes it open, and you'll see what we get momentarily. So first, nitrogen gets protonated. Water, again, can attack the carbon. And because water was initially neutral, we need to deprotonate. Yes, ma'am. What are you talking about?
I only see one there.
What functional group did we just make? Oh, a carboxylic acid, but a special kind, though. One with a nitrogen on the other side. It's a carbamic acid, which is thermodynamically unstable. So, not worrying about the mechanism, it loses carbon dioxide to make an amine, which this is the point of this rearrangement. We're trying to learn a way to make an amine. But notice one really important point. The starting material had an R group with a carbonyl and then the halide. But the product doesn't have that carbonyl, doesn't have that carbonyl carbon. One less carbon in the product than the starting material. We'll come back to that idea momentarily. And then I want to go back and make a note again about how the isocyanate, in theory, could be isolated. Because the next reaction I'm going to show you is very, very, very similar to this one. But it has two main differences. And one of them is whether or not the isocyanate can be isolated. So if it's not isolated, we still have a choice of what reagent that we throw at it next. So we have the way, we have the choice of how to decompose that isocyanate. Now let's look at this other rearrangement, which is the Hoffman rearrangement. Which instead of an acyl azide, it uses an amide as its starting source. So normally, if we had sodium hydroxide in heat and allowed these to react for a while, we would have what? What would this product be if this is the set of reagents? A carboxylic acid, because what kind of reaction is this? Okay, no, wait. Is this a carboxylic acid? No, technically this would make the salt because we've saponified but haven't added H+. But yes, that'd be saponification. But what if we didn't have just the sodium hydroxide? What if we threw bromine in it as well? What reaction have we seen already that has this set of reagents? The haloform reaction, correct? What would the haloform reaction conditions do to an amide, though? Well, notice how I have not written out the hydrogen on the left-hand side of the carbonyl. In other words, I have not written out the alpha hydrogen on carbon. Why? Because it's less acidic than the hydrogen on nitrogen. Why? Because of the special reactivity of nitrogen and the ability of those lone pairs to particularly well delocalize. So the first step of this reaction is going to make what looks like an enolate. We can then have attack on the bromine. Which means we'll remake the amide, but it will be N substituted. Just like we saw in nomenclature the other day, this idea of using N to designate the point of substitution. But from the haloform reaction, what do we know about this remaining hydrogen on the nitrogen? It's more acidic than the hydrogen that we started with. Remember in the haloform reaction, because we need to make the negative charge to do the attack, anything that stabilizes that negative charge helps the reaction along. Well, bromine, being an electronegative element, pulls electron density away from the nitrogen, makes the negative charge easier to form. So in other words, if you do the reaction once, it automatically is going to try to happen a second time. So this first hydrogen, let me make this point. That again, the hydrogen on the nitrogen is more acidic than the alpha hydrogen on the carbon. And this intermediate that we just made, that hydrogen is more acidic. Then the first hydrogen, due to induction. So now let me rewrite. So we can continue the mechanism. So hydroxide removes the second proton, which for a very specific reason, I won't show the formation of the enolate like ion. Because look at this intermediate that we just made, particularly the part that I'm going to put in a box here. We have a nitrogen that's negatively charged adjacent to a carbonyl, also adjacent to a leaving group. Go back up to the first reaction. Notice in that first reaction we had the same thing. Negatively charged nitrogen with a leaving group attached that was adjacent to a carbonyl. So the same thing that happened in this first reaction, where an alkyl shift occurs kicking out the leaving group, the same thing happens down here below. That's why these reactions are almost always taught at the same time. Even though they have different starting materials, their mechanism at some point is identical. So R group shifts over. Bromine kicked out as a leaving group, a carbon-nitrogen double bond forming as a response. Which means we again make the isocyanate. But since we're already in a solution with hydroxide, we can't isolate it because it's going to react with the hydroxide as soon as it forms. So the first reaction, all we had was the acyl azide, which itself spontaneously decomposed. Here we do have a compound that, yes, decomposes, but because of the reaction with sodium hydroxide and bromine. So hydroxide continues the reaction. Similar logic as the step up above, the reaction up above. Carbon is going to be the more delta positive because it's got these two more electronegative elements attached to it. Again, because, yes, we have a choice of which bond we want to open, but it turns out the carbon-oxygen bond is the one that's more favorable to be maintained. We're going to push the carbon-nitrogen double bond open. Which, we have two choices here. Since we had hydroxide, we could show water being the source of a hydrogen for this intermediate. Or notice that once that gets protonated, we have carbamic acid
which is an acid, which means that since you're still in basic conditions, it's going to get deprotonated.
Now, I think I had mentioned yesterday that in these kinds of compounds that would be thermodynamically unstable as the acid, if there's the salt, they're not unstable. Just like I'm pretty sure I had said yesterday some comment about bicarbonate. The bicarbonate ion is, of course, very isolatable, but it has the same type of motif, two heteroatoms on either side of the carbonyl. But by having neither one of them containing a hydrogen, bicarbonate, because only one of them has a hydrogen, the other one has a negative charge, that compound's stable. So here, though, once we add a little bit of acid, then we'll have decarboxylation, which gives us the amine. Now, for review, we could see that just like in the previous rearrangement, we start out with a compound that has a carbonyl in it, which means it has one more carbon in it than the product that we've made. And this would be the answer to the question, why do we need this rearrangement if we can just reduce an amide? Well, what if you had a really tricky amide to make? Maybe by doing this route, where you have one more carbon in there, if that happens to be easier, you could synthesize it, do this rearrangement, and get maybe a target amine that might be difficult otherwise to make. In fact, I'll say it this way. It's just one more tool, one more way that we have potentially to make an amine. And so what if I gave you this situation? Let's say that I give you a particular amine. And I ask you all the different ways you know to synthesize it. Well, I just said that there's a way to reduce amides. And then there's this alternate approach. If we were reducing an amide, we'd take a compound with the same number of carbons, and then we could use lithium aluminum hydride on it. Or we start out with an amide that has one more carbon in it. We try the equivalent of the halo form reaction and then work it up with acid. And as we just saw, it's going to cause the loss of a carbon. So we started with one more carbon but get the product that we want. Of course, these are only two methods. You could, of course, start with an alkyl halide and go several directions. You can use cyanide, which you then reduce, or oh, no, you can't use cyanide. Not with this particular alkyl halide. Why? Because the starting material would have two carbons. The product would have three, other than the benzene ring. So if we want to do this reaction, then we need one less carbon in it. Now, we could take the appropriate sized alkyl halide
There we go. React it with sodium azide and then reduce it.
The azide doesn't add carbon, it just adds the nitrogen.
We could take an imine and explicitly reduce it. Or we could take a aldehyde
and redo reductive amination on it. So, right, the ammonia reacts to make an imine. At the same time, we have hydrogen there that hydrogenates it, which that in this case, that automatically means it reduces it as well. Well, you notice I'm not writing all the synthesis out. I'm just writing the reagents. Well, I started this off by saying, imagine I gave you an amine and I asked you to show all the different ways you could use to synthesize it. So then there's that list of reactions I gave you, and we went over each one of those syntheses. So would you need to know all of those? Well, why would I be giving you this example question? Makes sense, in other words? And then the question I asked, that was asked by me by the other section when I was trying to hint to them that I was going to give a question like this. The question was asked, well, you're going to give us time? Well, how long did it take me to write these reactions down as I was explaining them? 4 or 5 minutes, maybe? Triple that, that's 12 or 15 minutes. But I was taking a long time to talk about each one of these, and I made some mistakes. If I'd done it more efficiently, it'd be more like 3 or 4 minutes, which means triple that, you should be able to do it in 9 to 12 minutes maximum. Maximum. Which then would give you the time left that you would need to talk about the acid-base properties of things like aniline pyrrole or N-ethyl ethanamine, which were the three main example molecules we talked about on Monday. Yes? Ah, yes, someone did spot that I made a mistake where I showed piperidine and pyrrolidine and I had swapped the pKa values. We'll revisit that after the quiz because I know I didn't answer that question of why are they different in pKa values. And even once I correct them, there's still the question of why are they different, which we'll talk about after the quiz. So, there's only two more things that I want to show you, which are not synthesis of amines, they're reactions of amines. So I know that we were going over the reduction of nitro groups. And I started to talk about aniline. Did I actually show, other than what happens, how to avoid the overreactivity of aniline? Okay.
So this topic often appears in textbooks that have a chapter on amines.
Because aniline is an amine. Of course, it's a special kind of amine. And just like the benzene ring has an influence on the nitrogen's basicity, it lowers it, the nitrogen has a huge effect on the benzene ring. Do we remember at all our orthopara versus metadirectors, our activators versus deactivators? Do we all shudder when I mention those terms? Hopefully I didn't see the reaction because it's not such a bad topic, is it? Does something add electron to benzene, or does something take it away? Aniline, is this an orthopara or a metadirector? It's an orthopara director, and it's a huge one. If I remember, it's probably at the very, very top of the list, practically, of things that are orthopara directors. Because, as we've seen in several other situations, this nitrogen so successfully delocalizes. Well, if the nitrogen's delocalizing, pushing electron density on the benzene ring, then that makes electrophilic aromatic substitution really, really super duper favorable. Which, for aniline, it does. It's so good, in fact, that you might be able to get away with doing an alkylation without adding a Lewis acid. Now, if we want to ensure that it's going to happen, we'll add the Lewis acid. And two points here. Three. Yes, I know you could get ortho instead of para. Ignore that. Because the rest of the argument would still be the same. Notice I didn't put an alkyl group on the nitrogen. Why? Because I have an alkyl halide. Couldn't we have SN2? Well, there's two answers to that point. One, the nitrogen's not very basic. What's the pKa of the conjugate of aniline? The anilinium ion. Because on Tuesday we talked about pyrrole and aniline and a non-cyclic amine, or at least a non-aromatic amine. And the average pKa of the conjugate of a non-aromatic amine was somewhere between 9 and 11, didn't we say? So what was the conjugate pKa of aniline itself? 4 to 5, somewhere in there. What about pyrrole? Negative 3, something like that. So if we have aniline with a pKa of the conjugate of about, let's call it 4, that means the pKb of aniline itself is 10, which means it's a really weak base. Weak bases don't make good nucleophiles, and so it doesn't do SN2 really easily. Beyond all that, if you have aluminum chloride, that's a strong Lewis acid. It'll react with the methyl iodide before the amine has a chance to. So put all those things together, that's why I put the alkyl group on the benzene ring, not the nitrogen. But that's not even the main point of the story right now. Because is an alkyl group an activator or a deactivator? Oh, I'm hearing two answers. It's an activator. Why? Hyperconjugation. It's able to put electron density on the benzene ring by hyperconjugation, which means the product is more reactive than the starting material. Since aniline is so reactive already, if you make it even more reactive, then it just keeps going and going and going. The nitrogen in aniline is by far the most activating thing on the ring, which makes it the orthopara director to put the alkyl groups relative to it in all of the ortho and para positions. So aniline is so reactive. That multiple addition can occur. During electrophilic aromatic substitution. But it turns out there's a way to prevent this. Which I might have shown this to you last quarter when we were taking this more from the perspective of aromatic compounds. But now let's focus on the amine. Because even though it might not react in the presence of aluminum trichloride at least,
with an alkyl iodide,
what about an acyl halide of some sort? Especially if we don't add aluminum trichloride. If all I had was this acyl halide and the amine, what do those make? Acyl halide plus amine equals what? Oh, come on. You just had this last week on your exam. Literally. I think I had a question, but it was almost just like this. You make an amide, don't you? The nitrogen attacks the carbonyl, kicks out the chloride, nitrogen gets deprotonated, that makes an amide. Which, what do you think the carbonyl does to the nitrogen's ability to make the benzene ring activated? It's going to make it less active, isn't it? Because the carbonyl is pulling electron density away from the nitrogen. The nitrogen's now conjugated with the carbonyl, not just the benzene. So it's enough less reactive that if you did a substitution reaction or a electrophilic aromatic substitution reaction, it's only going to happen once now. Because of conjugation between the nitrogen and the carbonyl, amides are less reactive orthopara directors. Now, remember that an amide, if you have the carbonyl next to the benzene ring, is a mega deactivator. But we have the nitrogen, the electron-rich element attached to the benzene ring, instead of the carbonyl, which is the electron-poor part of the structure.
So because of conjugation, blah, 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 amides are less reactive orthopara directors. Therefore, mono substitution can occur. So we react this with the same set of conditions, methyl iodide, for example, and aluminum trichloride. We'll still have the amide. We'll have put the alkyl group on now. And if we saponify, we don't care what happens to the amide. Instead, we focus on the fact that we're able to release the substituted amine, the substituted aniline specifically. So this is not exactly a protecting group. Maybe that term could be used in this case because we are masking some of the reactivity of that nitrogen. It's better called an attenuating group, something that reduces reactivity. But it is a common trick that's used so that you can get just monosubstitution on amylin. So that was just one side topic with amines. There's one very brief topic I want to show you. Because our textbook, again, is rather truncated in realm of amine chemistry. But there's one class of compounds that you just need to have seen once in case these come up in future classes.
And these are diazo compounds. More specifically, what are called aerodiazonium salts. So there are what are called aliphatic compounds, which are non-aromatic compounds. And then we have aromatic compounds. Often we can use phrases like an aliphatic halide to mean an alkyl halide, but one without a benzene ring involved. We could say aryl halide, which means take some benzenoid compound and put a halogen on it. So an aryl diazonium salt is this. You could take aniline and oxidize it. The mechanism, I don't want you to worry about because we're just doing this as sort of a survey. But we oxidize it with sodium nitrite. Nitrite in general can take an amine and turn it into one of these diazonium salts. Generally, those diazonium salts fall apart. Diazomethane is one of those examples. In that case, it's just normally a methylating agent. In other cases, if you have an alkyl diazonium, you can have an elimination reaction to make an alkene. But with the benzene ring here, it stabilizes the compound enough that it could be, if not isolated, used to make a whole series of products. And this is sort of the survey portion of this, because it's kind of a random assortment of reagents that we can throw at this, including things like, this will be the one example I give you, copper chloride to make an alkyl halide, without having to use harsh conditions like aluminum tribromide or aluminum trichloride. And also, we're not worried about where the substitution is going to occur. We could selectively put a halide where an amine used to be. Or if we use phosphoric acid, we make the amino group just go away. We get benzene back. Or with another reagent, we get a bromide. Another reagent, we get an iodide. Another reagent, we get an OH group, which means we get a phenol. This type of reaction in general is known as the Sandmeyer reaction. And I've shown you just one case of it, where you use copper chloride to make an aryl chloride. So in all these reactions, there's a two-step process. Start with aniline, convert it into diazonium salt by oxidizing with the nitrite, and then react it with something else to get one of several functional groups. The only one of which I want you to know is this chloride. That's our last amine topic. So we've completed what we're going to do with amines. Any questions? So we have just a little smidge of time left. And what I'm about to show you is not on the quiz because it's carbohydrate chemistry. But don't want to waste time. Just enough time to do this. What's the structure of glucose? So from top to bottom, which side do I put the OH groups? Right, left, right, right. What's going to happen if I put this into solution of sodium hydroxide? If I put this into a solution of sodium hydroxide, what do you think might happen?
Well, there's no acid, though. We have a ketone, so we could make a hydrate, but hydrates aren't favorable, so it just unformed. It could react with the OH groups, but that's just transferring a proton from one negative oxygen to another, so that proton could just bounce back and forth. But this is an aldehyde, which means we could deprotonate its alpha position. Sorry, that's kind of squished in there, but you can see I'm making the enolate. Which means that that stereocenter is lost. Because now it's sp2 hybridized. Which means if we let it go backwards, if we let the proton hop back on again, and remember we can't use H plus because we're in basic conditions, so we have to show water being attacked. Then we'll end up with two compounds. We'll, of course, get our original compound back, which is glucose. But because we lost the stereocenter before, that means we're going to get two possible products. Because both products are formed from the planar enolate. Oops. What is this other sugar formed? Oh, wow.
The matrix.
Is this the red sugar or the blue sugar? What's the other sugar? Mannose, that's right. Have you all been saying your phrases? Allose, altruose, glucose, mannose, gulose, idose, galactose, talose? You what? Well, maybe once I come out with the carbohydrate wrap, maybe that'll get everybody to remember it, right? Or no, the carbohydrates, we got to do the dance beat to. Because we got to get that. It's going to be the amino acid wrap. And if you don't think I'm serious, you've all gotten me tickled enough with the idea that I've got to do it before the quarter's up. But I got to work on my rhymes. Which I'm already trying to work on it, but I have a few other things like finishing grading the tests I got to do first. So do that first, yeah. So we're out of time. Are there any questions? Well, we're going to pick this topic up, though, after the quiz, because aside from just converting glucose into its cousin mannose, as I already said yesterday, it's also convertible into fructose, and we'll see that mechanism.